Hi, and welcome to another episode of Walleye Chronicles, where I drag you guys in and off the street, bring in here, and we figure out how you became the fisherman you are through whatever you were doing. If it's through being a kid, high school fishing, or just becoming an entrepreneur, like my next guest, Mr. Jason Mathey, who is a professional wall angler. He's also an entrepreneur, and he makes his own stuff and comes up with his own stuff. Jason, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful. So let's start off from the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
Oshkosh.
Oshkosh Fishing, the Wonderful Bagel.
Yep, the Wonderful Bagel.
So how was that as a kid?
Terrible.
Terrible?
I mean, it was good, but it was bad.
What do you mean?
Bagel is one of the toughest lakes to fish.
Yep.
So I learned on the hardest body of water to fish.
That's right. So what's your first memory of it?
Walleye fishing.
Yeah, or just any memory of fishing.
One that sticks out, my grandpa took me out and I caught one giant walleye on a slip bobber, and that's what got me hooked.
Where were you?
Somewhere just south of Stony Beach. We were perch fishing.
Oh, okay. So it was light line, everything?
Yep. It was a big walleye, and that one stuck out in my head pretty good over the years.
Is that what kind of got your, is that the first thing you remember? It kind of gets you going and fishing?
Yeah. I'm like, this is huge.
I do this all the time.
Yeah.
So did you fish a lot with your grandpa and your dad, or kind of how was your growing up fishing-wise? Was it any time you could finagle your way in the boat?
When I was younger, especially summer vacation, if I wasn't working for my dad, I was out in the boat with my grandpa. He's the one who took me out fishing and all that stuff. And I got my father into fishing a couple years ago, or back into fishing.
Okay.
So my grandpa was the one that started it all for me.
Seems like kind of a nice setup, just working and fishing.
Yeah, that's all I did.
Always on Bago? Did you guys ever get off and anywhere else?
We didn't. We kind of stuck to Bago for the most part. We go up to Michigan once a year, crappie fishing, but that's about it. When I was younger, now we travel a lot, but.
Okay. When you were first fishing, your grandpa, what kind of boat do you have?
I believe it was a Sylvan. Just old, beat up, nothing special.
Right.
But he made it work. Didn't need to go fast. I got a 75 Merc on it.
Okay.
And that's it.
Well, back then we didn't need the big boats, right?
No.
It's weird.
Yep. How they keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yep. I think it's bigger and faster.
Yep.
So, did he have any issues with that boat, or is it good starter? No funny issues with starting the motor like that, or was it a good starter?
It was for a couple of years. It's like every 3 years he had to replace it because it was a patched up job kind of boat, and then you replace it.
So, what kind of electronics did you start off with as a kid? Did you have any?
My first boat ever that I ran a tournament in, I had a hand-me-down Hummingbird that just told me the depth, and that's it. And
is that the brakes? That's all you really need, right?
Pretty much. And I entered in my first tournament with that boat. It was a 14-foot duck boat.
Nice.
No live well, nothing. People laughed at me. But I wanted to do it.
Right.
And then I got my second boat. It was a brand new Stratus, 18-footer. And I had the Rance on it. And that was pretty good.
Right. So back to that first boat, did you other stuff in it? Or was it, were you on the sandbar with it? Were you all over the place? Was it kind of your...
Yeah. We did some of that, but it was mainly just a fishing boat.
Fishing.
We'd take that little 14-footer everywhere. I'd run it from Oshkosh all the way up to Winneconne.
That's funny. That's awesome. How was the waves on that bad boy?
Not bad. It was my great-grandfather's boat. So it's old, and it was heavy, aluminum boat, and it could handle some waves. But I still have it to this day.
That's cool.
But that was the first one I started out in.
Did you do anything to make it your own?
I painted it.
Painted it camo?
Yep, camo for duck hunting. It was bright green, and I painted it camo.
What kind of motor do you have on it?
A 15-horse, 7-root.
There you go.
Still have it. To this
day. Still runs?
Yep, still runs. Everything works, except for the trailer's falling apart. But that can be fixed up, not a problem.
So was that in high school where you had that?
18 is 18. When I really started. So from 18 until present was my start of my fishing career. Obviously, as a child, I fished a lot with my grandpa. So
every waking moment?
Pretty much. because of his age, my grandma didn't like him to go out alone. So at least have somebody out there.
Right.
I mean, I'm 12 to 14 years old. I could still operate a boat if need be.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good perk.
That sounds like a blast. I love, a lot of people would love to have that, to be able to work with your dad during the day, hopefully if he's not dragging on you too much, and then go out with grandpa at night and fish.
There's a couple times in there where my grandpa called me up, said, let's go fishing. So I had to ask my dad to see if I can get off of work to go fishing.
Grandpa says, I got to go.
Yep. And that's how it kind of started. And those days are what shaped me.
What's the first thing you remember buying for yourself fishing? Was it lures or poles or something like that? What's the first thing you can remember that you like took that hard-earned money in?
Trolling rods. I remember that pretty clearly because I was using just bait casters as trolling rods. It worked, but that was the first real investment from hand-me-down stuff to...
To new stuff,
yep.
Where'd you get that from? Fleet Farm?
Shields.
Shields, okay.
I mean, they were nothing expensive. I mean, they were expensive to me at the time, but I remember making that initial investment because we got tired of it and we were getting some big fish and you couldn't get the fish in.
Right.
They dragged the board under, so...
Yeah, it's nice to get the first new rod. I don't remember my new rods for trolling, but I remember I got good line counters that worked. Decent line counters.
Yes.
Because before I'd be doing the counting game, I had two that were line counters and the rest weren't. So I was like, okay, well, I got to be close here.
Yep. We used to run Sharpie on the line to kind of mark it. That was before we had the money for line counters.
Right. I used to try to put the bobber stops on there, but then after a while they would just move and you'd be like, oh, they're moving on me. I think the first time out, that'd be perfect.
Yep.
But after that, you're hosed.
Yep. Tried that as well. I found the Sharpie worked pretty well. And metered line, we tried lead core and all that fun stuff, but it wasn't the same.
Right, yeah. I still try to figure out lead core. I can do it in the river, but man, I don't know. I lose half my stuff half the time. And
in the river, yeah, I won't touch lead core. Out in the lake, I'll use it, but not in the river.
My singles in the back on the sides, I'll do it, but that's only two pulls at a time, and that's a lot easier. I couldn't even fathom doing three on each side, trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
That's a whole different world.
Yep. A whole lot of math and speed.
Right. So you got the first boat, fish tournament, and you got into your next boat. What was the next boat like? And tell me about your first tournament experience.
The first tournament experience was in that duck boat where they laughed at me. And then I took sixth. And
nice.
Kind of shocked everybody. I'm like, all right, I like this.
What'd you do?
What'd I do for?
For fishing.
We trolled.
Trolled?
Yep. I had four rod holders and this little duck boat. We just trolled. I believe Rapala. Thundersticks.
Okay.
I think that's what it was. But that's how we did. And then I went up to a bigger boat when I could afford it. That was the 18-foot Stratus with a 115 horse. Added a kicker on it. I troll. I thought I was a king. I'm like, this is awesome.
Right?
So I fished that one season out of that, and I ended up winning my first tournament. That was probably the proudest day of my life.
Cool. We were trolling that day.
Yeah, it was super windy, and all the fish were out in the middle. Everybody was on them. It was a big pot of fish, and they were all trolling. My boards were going back, and I'm like, we need one upgrade to win this thing. We had 7 minutes left before we had to leave.
Yep.
Sure enough, that board went back, and there was our upgrade.
That's a great feeling that board goes back. Normally, for most people, that doesn't end up being
the
magic fish. Usually, just goes back for a sheep head or something else. But
yep, and that's like I knew immediately as soon as it went back, nice and easy. I'm like, that's a good fish. Brought that in. Then I had to tell my secret on what I was doing different. So those guys are running flicker shads at 12 foot. That's what that part would say for it.
Yep.
I just ran the line out 148 instead of like 120.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that made the difference. Just because that depth chart says it stops at 12 doesn't mean it stopped.
That's true.
Well, that was a little trick that I pulled and it worked.
Oh, that's cool. So what about you're a troller?
I do troll a lot, yep.
So what about trolling that just makes you love it?
Harnesses for one. That's my favorite game. I like just watching that board go back. You can tell what kind of fish it is just by the way the board goes back. And you cover a lot of water. Jigging, I've never been particularly good at.
Okay.
I'm learning that stuff, though.
Right.
But I just kind of grew up trolling out in the mud, pulling harnesses. And I was catching giants.
See, I'm the opposite. I grew up jigging in the river. And now I spend my time trying to catch up to guys like you that are trollers.
Yeah. I read an article from some pro at the time. To win tournaments, you're going to need to learn how to pull boards and fish a river. I'm like, okay, I can do that. I started learning that.
Right. What's been the hardest part about trolling for you to learn to get down?
Reefs, when they constantly change.
Okay.
And I'm sick of losing baits.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's kind of a pain.
That is. When you're running three boards each side, I'm like, one's going to get hung up. And obviously shallow.
Yep.
Every time. That's been the hardest thing to kind of figure out. But first two passes through, then I got it down. I know where to run it.
What height to be at?
Lose about $50 with the baits, but that's fishing.
That is fishing sometimes, especially you're in around them reefs. They can bite you pretty quick.
Yep.
Bite you hard, too. You can go from having six back to all of a sudden you got two back and all the rest are gone.
Yep. Couple times, for sure.
What do you think is the most difficult part about trolling? About, is it using weights? Is it, obviously you said going up and down trolling. Do you do a lot of bottom bouncing, things like that, too, or?
Yeah, in a sense. I don't think like traditional bottom bouncing where you're holding the rod. But when I'm always trolling, I have two boards out my side. I'm controlling the boat. I always have one hanging over the side with the bottom bouncer, and that one will hit.
Yeah.
And
why is that?
I don't really know why. I know the rig I have set up that always catches them. I just think it's in the strike zone at all times.
I gotcha.
And then with the boat rocking up and down, you got the bottom bouncer hitting it, lifting it, and
you control it better.
Yeah, you got more control over it.
Right.
I noticed that here on Bago and like the bay, that's been outperforming boards at times. Bow control is always huge when trolling. That's a difficult task.
What do you think is the most important? If you were teaching a new troller, what would you tell them to master first?
Bow control. For sure. If you don't have control of the boat, you're never going to catch it.
Yeah.
That's something I had to learn. I learned the hard way last year, popping from boat to boat while mine was being fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I was in a loaner. It didn't have all the stuff that I'm used to.
All the gadgets and gadgets.
Yes. So that was tough. But I found out different ways how to slow the boat down and all that.
Turning was difficult for me.
Turning?
Turning at first was tough. I think I've mastered it now, but at first I had no clue. And bringing fish in too. I mean, obviously Bago, you have a lot of fish on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, between sheephead and walleyes and crappies and all that stuff. It seems like you're always doing something, and having learned how to bring them outer boards in and back and forth is just, I thought that was the hardest part for me at first. Cause at first I would pull everything. I would just, you know, I would reel one in and I would slap one to the other side to get the other, you know, to play that game. Until I learned how to kind of move them in around each other and let one back and all that kind of fun stuff.
Yep. That's definitely a challenge. I still won't put three boards out my side, especially if I'm control the boat.
Right.
It's just too much. So I always just run the two and then one off the back, and it seems to work. I don't make a mess anyway.
Right.
But it has its moments where it gets the best of me.
Right. Especially it's tough when you get in those, like you said before, you know, the big groups out there. And it's like, it's almost like watching the first Top Gun, where Maverick doesn't want to go in, and there's all these people everywhere. And you're like, who the hell is going which direction?
Yeah.
People are all over the place.
Yep.
And there needs to be some kind of like unwritten rules out there to
Right. Yeah, keep things organized. People aren't running over people's boards and all that.
You got guys pulling harnesses, guys pulling flickers, and well, now you, if you're around any rocks, you probably have somebody out live scope in the middle of no man's land.
Oh, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Throws everybody for a loop because you don't know, you don't realize that's what he's doing because you can only see boards from 100 yards away. If it's a little bit of wind, you don't see nothing. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, shit.
Yep. Yep.
Hard right.
We had a tournament where that actually happened. We had all pre-fished, knew the fish were there, and then there was perch there.
Oh, that's the worst.
Come tournament morning, there's no way we're trolling this.
That is the worst. The perch guys aren't the worst, but that's a killer when you go up there. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're pulling up on your reef. Like, what are these people doing here? And, oh, they're all perch fishing.
Yep. Couldn't work it. I'm like, well, plan B it is. Right. But it's happened a few times. Guys in the way, people trolling over boards. I've lost a few boards to that. It's bound to happen. You spend that much time out there.
That's true.
You're going to pretty much see everything.
Yeah, you're going to have those rough. There's not, we've all had those days where we're just at the back of the boat and everything's tangled up and you're,
mm-hmm.
and you got boards that are broke off and just floating, and you're like, hey, keep an eye on that board because we're going to try to go get it.
Yep.
And you're trying to get everything together and you're just the absolute mess. Yeah.
Sometimes it's the most chaotic time, but then that'll give me the time to calm down, refocus my brain. And then after it's all done, I go back out and just, all right, I know what to do. It's
right.
Like muscle memory. Get it back down, get recomposed,
mm-hmm.
and perform better.
Right. I always think it's funny because when I'm all tangled up, or when even my partner's tangled up or whatever, and it can be 2 foot waves, but yeah, we can go back on the back of the boat and grab it and just be like, calm, even though you're mad, you're calmly working on this. And I'm like, yeah, it's just like you have that to focus in, no matter how bad the waves are, and you're just bouncing around trying to fix your stuff, get your stuff fixed, and move on. But
yeah. That's yep.
crazy.
And that's something me and my partner have worked on for years now. That it's in sync with one another when everything is going bad. If you find a partner, you fish with somebody that doesn't know what's going on or what to do, you're going to have
It can be tough. Just
bigger mess.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of partners I fish with, but I also started taking my kids out every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know how to fish, but they don't know, how to competitively troll. And how to that's a whole different game. I'm just like, okay, we're just having fun today. Right? Because somebody that's not in the same hurry to put poles out, it's actually quite alarming how fast a guy that trolls can put their shit out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool, actually. They should have little combines for that because it's crazy what guys can get out.
It's so hard to go from competitive mode to pleasure. Right? So I'll take my girlfriend out and we always do a 4th of July kind of thing.
Yep.
And I'll be out there fishing it like it's a tournament.
Right.
And she's just leisurely fishing. I have to take a step back and remember that she's out here for fun and I'm not competing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done it before where all of a sudden I've got everything. I'll cook the last one in the holder. I look over and they're on one. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess it is what it is.
But yep. Yep.
That is kind of, that's one thing about trolling that I guess I just realized that it is it's very chaotic. Mm-hmm. Especially when you first get going, you fly across the lake, you hit the brakes, drop the trolling motor down. You're trying to get going on your tracks and you're putting your boards out and you're talking back and forth of you know, what depths you're at, what colors you're using, all that kind of stuff. It is actually quite chaotic if you think about it.
It is. I always found usually the first pass I make is my buffer pass. I'll work out the bugs that pass.
Yep.
By the time I turn around and do the second one, it should be mastered.
Mm-hmm.
If the fish are going to bite, they're going to bite that pass. The first one's always a crazy one.
Right.
And I always write down depth-wise, keep track of it, and what color. I have a pen and paper always in the boat. Got it down.
I try to do that when I lost everything. And I was thinking about getting a wax marker and writing the window.
Yeah.
But then you have to come around the front. But
betcha they like you could get a write on sticker.
Right.
That can probably erase. I'm sure they make something like that. But I always have a notebook. And I keep track of fish we catch, depth, color, all that fun stuff.
So you're a numbers guy. Is that what kind of helps? What makes you really want to troll is the numbers and the kind of little finite part of it.
Yeah, because you can fine tune it down to the smallest little detail, and it'll make a huge difference. Like, it's crazy. We did it up on Poygan in the Elite Series. Made a run from the mouth of the river that wasn't working all the way up to Poygan. Popped our fish within a half an hour, and then we were just basically fun fishing the rest of the time. Right. We ended up second, but we nailed it down to 2.1 miles per hour in Hollywood sawmill.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Number fours, I think they are. And it was just lights out.
So what do you think is more important, color or speed?
Depends on time of year.
Okay.
I think speed in the summer is huge. And spring, I would say color.
Okay.
But that's just based off personal experience.
Yeah, we all have our own
yeah.
quirks.
What yeah.
we're going to use and how we're going to use.
Exactly.
Like we all, I mean, I get in people's boat and I like to look to see what their confidence lures are. Mm-hmm. Right? Because everybody has the same like three or, I mean, I have the same four poles set up and they're set up the same way every time. It doesn't matter if it's springtime, summer, it's the same shit all
yep.
the time. It doesn't change. It just makes me happy.
Right? Yep. That's how I got. At least 8 in the boat that are just like that.
Yeah, just ready to go.
Always rigged, always ready yep. to go in case I need them.
What's your favorite lure to troll besides harnesses? Your favorite is stick bait or Selmo or?
Flicker minnow has been really good lately. And those I've enjoyed. Especially the big ones, Flicker 11s on Bago.
Is there a color that gets fired up? Do you have to have it no matter what? Even if you're not catching, say you got your board out and there's one favorite color that you leave on till the very end.
Usually it's a holographic perch.
Okay.
That's kind of been always the go-to. I've always caught fish on it. Didn't matter what body of water, from Bago to the bay, river, it didn't matter. That was always the go-to.
Right.
So I got lots of them.
I'm a gold guy. Like I have to have a gold on usually whenever I go out. I don't know why. It just, my thing is always on. It's always a gold. I don't know why.
Gold this year was key. Yeah. It was absolutely nuts. Yeah. Everything came on gold. Right. So yeah, once good. We learned that, it was a lot better.
Do you think the colors changed year to year? They kind of come back, or is it just kind of what the hatch goes, or how do you think the colors get? We get through colors every year. Is it like where the colors are gonna come back, or just a new color that's kind of gotten them fired up, or just somebody's got to it, or I think there's anything to it other than just the clarity and the day? It does seem like once you get into a color, or is it our confidence that we have the confidence in that color that once we caught up that day, we kind of stick with it more often? You know what I mean? Like, is it more of us or is it more the fish? So we're jamming it down there, you're gonna eat this fucking gold today,
yeah,
because I want you to eat it.
Yep. Today. I think it's a little of both.
Okay.
Because, like, some colors that I run, walleyes aren't even supposed to see.
Mm.
And that's a whole nother level right. of thinking and what to use. But as far as, like, confidence colors I would use, your primaries, your orange, your chartreuses, like, those always are good.
Yep.
Always have been good. But that perch one, I'll run that all the time. I'll run it all day. It won't catch a single fish, but I'll still run it.
Right, yeah. I'm going to use that with a gold or a fire tiger. It's always someplace close.
Yep.
All right, now I'm going to move on to something that I know you love. Because I don't spend much time in a lake because I'm generally a pole and hand guy. But I do spend a lot of time in the river. And I've probably seen you, because we're same area. I see you pull flies more than any man known in history.
Flies,
you have
favorite.
A passion for fly pulling.
I love it.
Tell me about it.
That is like my go-to. Doesn't matter what time of year, other than winter, I will go in that river and pull flies. And it works. I just, first time I ever used it, a couple times out, I'm like, these things suck. What are
right.
Guys right next to me are catching fish. What am I doing wrong? finally clicked one day on what I was doing versus what they were doing. Yep. And I started pulling in big fish. We had a 25 that one day. I'm like, all right, this is fun. But there's nothing like when you're pumping it and all of a sudden, wham, that feeling and that rod just bends over. I love it.
Once you figure it out, it is. I had a rough go at it because obviously it's not something that I do very often, but it took me a while to figure it out. And I'm like, once I got it, like, okay, I get it. I get it now. It makes a little more sense.
Yep.
It was for a while there, I would just be pumping and pumping in days. And I'm like, oh, this is stupid. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it at all. But sometimes it's like, that's the only way you catch fish too. I mean, sometimes if you're not pumping, you're not catching shit. You're just wasting gas, kind of feels like. But you rock through the whole year, which astonishes me. And you catch fish all year long, which is crazy to me. Yeah. Do you change anything as you go through into summer, or just the same color, same technique?
I'll change up.
Less weight, I'm guessing.
I run twos no matter what, but the style is different. And style. That of sinker.
Oh, okay.
That plays a huge role in my conversion rate, catch to not catch. I run pyramid sinkers.
Really? They don't get tangled up?
Nope. Not as much as you'd think, but when you pull on them, they vibrate. So you're starting to touch that lateral line in that walleye now. With that, that's an added thing.
It is an added thing.
And I've thrown my rattles on there too, and then that's also of work. But as soon as I change to that pyramid sinker, just by pure odds, I'm like, I don't have any pencils left. We're going to use this. Okay. And you can feel it. I'm like, oh, we're onto something here.
The difference there. Do you ever run jigs in the bottom too, or no? Are you? I've seen people do that. I've never tried that. You don't have enough jigs that are heavy enough to do all that.
Yeah, no, I've never done it. I think you get snagged.
Yeah.
Too much. We get snagged enough as it is.
That is true.
And I kind of know where to avoid now, but
it is a weird thing where you kind of know either you got to pump super high right now and get them up off the bottom a little bit and drop them back down, or move them left or right. And
there's a spot in the mouth of the river every time. Like, we pull in there, and it's on my dad's side usually. I'm like, well, we're coming up to that spot. He's like, yep, I know. I was to lift it up and then drop it back down.
Do you tie your own stuff too, or no?
I don't tie the flies. My hands don't work good enough, but I have a buddy that ties them for me. I come up with patterns and the lengths and all that. But like the rigs themselves, I tie. These are different than anybody's ever seen.
I gotcha. And everybody's got their own little ways.
People look at it like, well, what are you doing? But it works.
Right. I've seen some different size. But then I saw somebody, I thought, oh, Joel Cotta had a video the other day, and he only does like 12 inches. And I'm like, Jesus, that's tight. They were like, he did a whole wingspan for everything, but then he goes 12 inches off the bottom and they're in between there. And I'm like, but then he does do Mississippi and more other things. Maybe that's different for what we're doing. But I'm like, I don't know. Everybody's different. But he obviously catches fish.
Yeah.
So it kind of threw me for, I'm like, damn.
I watched that video too. I'm like, what is he doing?
Right. But he catches them. But he does more of a casting, I think. Maybe that's why.
Yep.
I don't generally catch. Do you cast yours?
Never done it.
No.
Never done it.
I generally don't do that. So.
Hey, pulling them. I love it. I know just about every hole in that river. I'm kind of hoping this year for game, because we got the early warmth and fish are back in the Fox where I can have fun.
Right.
Up on the Wolf River, I don't know that well enough yet.
Yeah. I know way up, but in between, I don't know.
I know about two spots in there, and that's about it. I never took time to go up in there.
And everything, it seems there's a lot more snaggy stuff up in there, too. It seems
it's
tough to run that gear up there sometimes.
There's one spot that I usually hit when I'm up there pre-fishing or in a tournament that I have two options. Either I'm going to get a snag or I'm going to get a fish. There's no in between. So I have to hit it just perfect. So I've lost my fair share of flies.
Yeah, you definitely. What's your rod setup for that?
I use a Black Mac.
Okay.
And like, that's my favorite rod to use. And then I don't remember what the name it was, like a reel.
Okay. Those make life so much easier. The one thumb action.
I just got one last year for the first time. And I've been just
right.
doing it normal and controlling the boat. And I'm like, this thing's awesome. And then I lost it at 41. I hit a snag with it pumping, ripped it right out of my hand in the water. Went back after the tournament was over. Think I could snag it? Nope.
I've seen people lose stuff in it. We actually lost a net in. I'm like, it's right here. It was a heavy, and then the Green Bay nets. And I'm like, there's no way we'll get it. It's right here, right? And no, never got it.
Yeah.
You even put the 360 down and try to find it. Yep. Couldn't find it. I'm like, it's here someplace. I don't know if the, you know, it hits the soot, probably jumps up, or maybe there's more current there than I thought there'd be and kind of push it out. But
that's kind of my thinking. I'm like, this is probably way downriver by now.
Right. I didn't even know that was a thing when I bought mine for pumping. I had no clue. And someone's like, hey, you can just do that with your thumb. I'm like, oh.
I didn't know until like 2 years ago, and I just never bought one. I went up to Critters. I'm like, all right, set me up one. Find one. I don't know what they look like because every bait caster looks the same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, for us walleye guys.
Yeah. Whatever. He's like, this is what you want. I'm like, all right. And it made life a lot easier.
Yeah, that's the only. I have two on the boat, bait casters on the boat, and that's all they're for. I mean, they're.
Yeah.
I don't. No reason. I mean, I might change them out and do like pull bottom bouncers, you know.
That's what I do with them.
The rest of the year. Bottom. I don't do the whole. I can't do the fly all year long. I
could do it forever. And I know one man
Why? Because it just the hit, the way they hit, the way they pound on them.
Yeah. And when it's a big one, there's no better feeling than you just feeling that thing rip on it.
Right.
When we pulled basically at 24 average, we had 23s in there out of that one hole. That was awesome. That was probably the best day of my life under Ohio Street. When they hit that fly, it was like hitting a brick wall and just dead stop. Or like, if this is a walleye, it's huge because we're thinking like catfish or something.
Sure. Yeah, because they don't seem to come up the same way. It's like a different fish almost.
Yep. And then I hooked the first one. I'm like, no, this is a walleye. And I have really long leaders, really long. I'm at the front of the boat trying to control it. And my dad's in the back trying to net it. Man, that was fun. You hit that every time you hit it perfect, you're getting a big fish.
So what do you think is the most important part for somebody that's starting out to do for flies? Is it getting the weight right, getting the angle right,
getting the action right? I mean, pumping them, there's an art to it.
Yep.
And once you get that right, you can fine tune the rest of the stuff. And you'll build your confidence if you're doing at least one step correctly, pumping action of it.
Right.
And that's kind of how I had to learn when I'm looking over watching those guys, how they're pumping flies.
Yeah, right. Why am I catching that? What he's doing? Yeah, right.
And that's what I learned. And I think that's kind of the key.
Right.
Get one thing down to get some fish under your belt, and then you can fine tune it as you go to your own needs.
It helps too that because white bass bite them. So when the white bass come through, you really kind of can learn how to catch fish through the white. Because I mean,
yep,
it seems like if they're there, they're gonna bite it.
Oh, it's incredible. Doubles all the time.
Do you ever run three on one or no?
No, I've never run three. I stick with my two and the way I got them rigged, and that just seems to be the key for me. And I don't. Not broken, don't fix it.
Right? No kidding. So when did you start having lure ideas?
2019 was when it first started popping into my head. 2020 is when I first built it. And it's just something out of the blue. A buddy of mine said something about it. And I'm like, that's true. There's nothing like it on the market.
Mm-hmm.
I started tinkering around, made some out of wood, didn't work very well. Bought a 3D printer, didn't work very well until I learned it.
Right.
Then.
And 3D printers are pretty cool, but you got to know how to use them. Otherwise, it's just a big paperweight.
Yep. But once I started getting into like the 3D printing, I'm like, I can make pretty much anything now.
Right.
And that's when it really fueled up. And the testing and all that fun stuff. That started all in 2020. It, probably 3 months to finish a print and a bait. And then we've just been testing it and testing it and testing it until I ended up getting it patented. But there's no better feeling than that, too.
I bet. When did you know that you had a, that you had something that was going to work? Was there a time when you're testing it where you had it, you had out and just started just hammering them? Or was, what was the turning point where, like, this is, like, it's done. Now I need to move on to see if I can patent it and make some money off this bad boy.
There was two instances. And it wasn't even by me. It was two guys that I had testing it that pretty much confirmed all my theories on it. I mean, I was catching fish on Winnebago with
it. Right, yep.
But we were up on Green Bay. He was pulling just big spoons, like musky spoons. Mm-hmm. And then he put my rattles in front of it, kind of like a teaser.
Yep.
And these fish were sluggish, and they wouldn't bite. So he's throwing spoons to go faster and getting a reaction bite out of them. And then he talked to me about that. He's like, you're onto something here. I'm like, all right. And my other buddy was up on Green Bay pulling harnesses. He was pulling mine, and there's boats all around. Those guys were the only ones to catch fish. Oh. And they were all fishing the same fish. And at the boat launch, one of the guys came up to him and asked him, what were you doing different? Yep. Like, there's only so many possibilities. And he showed him, like, this is what we were doing different.
Wow.
And it worked.
That's cool.
And I guess a third one, my first retailer ever, my buddy gave him some. And 2 days later, he was in a tournament. And he ended up taking, I think, third. But he qualified for the NTC because of those.
Nice.
And that's how he became a retailer for it.
That's cool.
He's that's like, awesome. It worked. It got me into the NTC. I'm like, great. Now I have to go beat you next year. And
right, with my stuff.
Yep.
So where did Ghost Tackle come out of? Tell me the story behind that, how that got started.
It just, well, obviously the idea came before the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to think of something that was kind of different. So I kind of just came up with Ghost Tackle. Because for a while there, I was dealing with like scents and all that stuff.
Yep.
I was going to make a scent killer and make a ghost. Then,
that makes sense.
So that kind of spiraled off of that, and it stayed with me. I haven't heard of it. I did a Google search. There is one company similar. It was just different. I liked it.
That's cool.
So that's kind of how I did it.
So how many baits do you have currently?
Like,
well, the that are for sale, I guess.
I'm about to upload 3 different styles of bait.
Okay.
I think next month I'll put them up for retail and online. What's coming is a lot.
Is it? So you have, before that, not currently, you do ice fishing stuff, right?
Yeah, I make some ice fishing stuff.
Ice fishing stuff, and then you do your rattles.
Yep.
Rattles. So what? You can put the rattle on everything. Tell me about it. Does it go everywhere? Anything?
Anything.
Anything?
I had a conversation with John Creighton from Bayshore, and he said, like, you can literally put them on anything.
Mm-hmm.
They were putting them on shiver minnows. Don't ask me how. I think vertically.
Oh.
Doing it like that.
Okay.
But you can put them on anything. And that was the beauty behind it and kind of the whole concept.
Mm-hmm.
Is I want to make something. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to make it universal. So it's not strapped to one target species of fish. So just by making it either bigger or smaller, you can, from ocean to freshwater, you can do whatever you want. So that was kind of why I made it, the design and the shape and all that. There's some trade secrets in there that, if somebody looks hard enough, they'll find them, but I can pretty much put them on anything. I've caught bass, northern walleye, salmon, lake trout. I've never caught a muskie with them, but I know guys that have. It's endless. That's what gets me fired up.
Right? Does making the lure, are you more proud of making the lure or when someone sends you a picture of a big fish with your lure in its mouth?
Oh, definitely when somebody sends a picture. It's like a proud dad moment, if you will. Like, I saw a vision here, and I built it, and now it's working for somebody.
Right.
that's kind of a good moment.
That's cool.
So
not many people can say that they've done that. They've taken from an idea to the market and catching fish.
Yeah. And I was, once I started it and I was committed, I'm like, I'm in all the way. Doesn't matter what it costs, I'm going for it.
Yep.
So that's what I did, and I still continue to do it.
So you just, so how does, like, are you just fishing and trolling or whatever, and I was like, hey, we should do this, and then go kind of write it down, figure out, see how it works, and kind of, how's your developing a lure go for you? How is that process like? Is it like, kind of just, you get an idea for something, bounce off somebody, see if it makes sense to them, and then kind of go forward with it, trying to make a prototype, or how does you kind of work through all that stuff?
Well, currently I got guys coming like to me with ideas, but when I first started, it was just to get something different out there. I'm like, why don't, there's nothing out here like that. I think that would work.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a boat problem solving, basically trying to figure out different action.
Right, yeah.
What's it going to do? And obviously I write everything down and then I just put it right in my CAD program, start making it. If it works, some absolute failures. I have them on my wall too, because I sucked that bat. As a reminder that, hey,
you keep trying.
Yeah, keep going. And I've made thousands of them, but the successful one, obviously, I have the patent on them. But I'm trying to solve different issues that I have in the boat. If I have an issue with it, I'm sure somebody else does.
I gotcha.
And baits are everywhere. Tackle makers are everywhere. Anybody can be them.
Right.
So I want to be something different, do something different. Actually, my patent went through the office faster than any patent my attorney has ever seen.
Wow.
Just over a year. Usually it'll be drug out for a while. And after your final filing, I got it a month after my final filing.
Wow.
I'm like, good deal. Because there was nothing on the market compared to it. Well, that was my kind of whole thought process on it. Make it universal, make it work. Found his key. Keith Gavaya's actually helped me out with figuring out what tune to make it for walleye.
I gotcha.
And there's different tunes for bass and so on and so forth.
That's cool.
It's so intricate and the fine details. That's what I like about doing it.
That's cool. Kind of like trolling.
Exactly. It's every little thing. Once you put the puzzle together, it's like, wow, all this can be accomplished.
Right.
Well, that's my thing. I love doing it. I don't care if I make a dime off of it. I enjoy it that much.
That's cool. So... in the, as things go in the future, do you want to, well, we're writing the last story about Jason. Do you want to be known as a tournament guy or a lure maker?
Lure maker, probably. That's something I'm more proud of. I could take all my plaques off the wall and just hang that patent paperwork and be just content with that. Not many people can say that they've went that length. Right. So that's how I'd like to, you know, be remembered. That's cool. Kind of pioneer something.
That's cool. That's a whole different, it's a whole different category almost.
Yeah.
No attractant really. It's kind of like its own little thing. At it, you know, it almost seems to me kind of like a scent, because it's an additive to whatever you have.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. You can add it, and or you can make a physical bait out of it. Component.
Yep.
I'd take that over angler any day or a competitive fisherman. That's where it really lays. But when I win on them, it feels that much better.
It feels a little better.
Yep.
That's funny. The only bad part is now you're talking about people winning against you on them.
Yep.
That's not a bad feeling though either.
Nope.
Like, oh, I lost to so and so. But he had my shit on.
Yep. It's, this year's going to be a year for that. I already see it coming, just for something I'm actually going to be releasing, because I know it's that good, and I kind of dragged my feet on it for years now. Now I'm like, all right, we got to go public with it because it's that good.
That's cool.
And people just kick my butt with them if they're on the right fish. It's all who's on that fish.
Right, yeah. You got to have the fish too.
Yeah. I'll get killed and murdered by them, but it works. When Gary and Grace, we went out fish bag on. It was the first time I ever showed them it.
Yep.
And I was catching walleyes. What is that? I'm like, this is my blade. So
that's awesome.
That one's coming this summer, in a spinner form and like a harness and a bucktail.
So do you do all the manufacturing yourself too as well?
Right now, yeah.
Holy mackerels.
I was supposed to have this already done and taken care of, but some hiccups in the road,
right,
with a certain company that I had to deal with first.
Right.
So,
yeah, there's a lot, I can't imagine a lot of moving parts out there getting things manufactured, especially nowadays. And so instead, you're banging away at home every night, huh?
Yeah, every night. It doesn't stop. I keep going. So, like this winter, it was slow for selling like ice tackle, which is good. We didn't have any ice.
Yeah, right.
So I'm that much farther ahead for summer stuff.
Oh, makes sense.
But once this whole thing gets wrapped up, I'll be able to get my manufacturing done because I have a manufacturer. I have a third party people that I trust with everything. I just got to hit the green button and have them go.
I gotcha.
So they already have samples. They have the molds and all that stuff.
That's cool.
So just one minor hiccup and then I can have it manufactured professionally.
Awesome.
Hey, listeners, let's talk outdoor streaming. What is the best outdoor streaming platform out there? Well, it's simple. It's Fixtv. Not only do they have this great program, but they have all kinds of hunting and fishing shows along with some weaponry shows. So when you get bored and need something to do, get your fix with Fixtv. And when you're done with that and you have that fix to get out in the outdoors, jump on therealshot.com and get everything you need to satisfy your fix.
So moving on from there, if you were going fishing, can only go one more time, what you doing? What are you taking?
One more time as in this year?
One more time ever.
Oh, I'm going to
I'd taken your shit away from you tomorrow.
I'm going
to fish today.
I'm going to Erie.
Okay. Trolling?
Yep. I have no idea where, but I'm going. I'll find them once I'm out there. Because I've never been to Erie, and that's on my bucket list. Never.
No, I haven't either. I almost went last year, but I had, like you, I had a boat issue.
Yep.
So I was out in my time when I was going to go was, didn't happen. So maybe this fall I'll get out there.
That's what I was thinking. If I can have a normal year for a change. Back years, boat issues. So.
Yeah, that kind of sucks when that stuff happens. But
with brand new boat that you're paying $100,000 for.
Yep.
Get a little salty about that.
People definitely tend to. I think my wife was more salty than I was. I was just trying to keep a positive attitude through the whole thing and move on. I mean, luckily I had other people I could fish with and stuff to make my life easy. I didn't get a loner boat like you did. So I was kind of struggling to finish off my tournament year and the friends boats and stuff like that. But
yeah, it's tough. Unexpected like that. And if you don't have a backup boat, that's really tough.
I mean, although I am working on a backup boat, but it's more of a spring beat me up walleye slash duck hunting boat than a backup tournament boat. But.
Yep. Yeah. I got my eye on a Warrior right now. It's an older one, but customer of mine never uses it. It sits on his lift 90% of the time. So that'll be the backup.
Right, that's nice.
Been working on him, so I think this spring is when he's finally gonna crack and sell it.
That's cool. So what things bother you in the fishing world? What things can we change? What things would you like to change? If it's the fishing world, if it's the people in it, electronics.
The industry, I wish changed as a whole. Anglers sometimes are over competitive.
Yeah.
And it's salty if you beat them. And they take you seriously, in my opinion. Somebody kicks my butt, good for you. Right. Congrats, I'll shake your hand.
Yeah.
The industry, though, you start talking to bigger and bigger companies. Yep. how do I put it, shadier it gets.
Yeah.
And you see the ugly side of it versus sure. a regular everyday angler, weekend fisherman doesn't get to experience that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to play in both worlds.
Yeah, it is.
Once you see what happens behind the curtain, sometimes it's tough to.
Yeah.
You don't want to ruin anybody else's dreams.
Yeah, when you start to see that, it gives you a whole different outlook on things. It changed me for a little while, my perspective and outlook. I don't want to do this.
Right.
But I snap back into it. I'm like, we're still going.
Right, it's still fishing at the end of the day. Sometimes you can get over. You can go over. Get over a lot of things.
Fishing's my piece. So, like, when my boat got taken away from me early, like last 2 years, due to issues, what am I going to do?
Right.
Like, at the end of the day, I'm out in the boat until dark. That's my piece. That's how I get away and think and clear my head for the next day.
Right. Yeah, when I, right after July, and all my plans got kind of thrown over, but normally it's 4 to 5 days in the water every week, and the fall was tough. I mean, I bow hunt and stuff, but that's only one thing. But that's also, we had a great fall fishery, which was a pain. You're not fishing every day. I'm sitting at home putting on more weight because what else am I going to do?
Yep.
You get to spend a little more time with the family, but at the end of the day, sometimes they don't want to spend time with me. They want me gone, right?
So, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird getting into this year, getting in. I was actually going to go pick up the boat tonight and start getting it ready to go, and I'm like, I just gonna feel weird having a boat in the driveway again. Always had a boat in the driveway, always had around. And then all the last year, I'm like, nothing. Or end of last year, nothing. I'm like, it's gonna be weird having it around again. And it's, I kind of miss her. I don't even know. Like, I want to introduce myself all over to her and talk to her. I'm like, hey, how you doing again?
Yeah. It's such a strange feeling when that kind of stuff happens that I don't think everybody understands. Like, a non-angler wouldn't kind of comprehend exactly what you're saying. Right.
I had a weird moment where I would go fishing on the shore, and as a river fish, I'm like, you know what, I'll fish the river, right? And I remember sitting down by the, I think it's the, where the old, not the old folks home, but where the senior center is, down by the old Cub Foods there, and I was fishing off a shore, and I remember seeing these two nice glittery boats come by me, and one literally the boat I have, another one just a, boat I, fished in, and I'm like sitting there fishing from shore, and I'm like,
yep.
This is the weirdest feeling ever. Like, I was so sad, but at the same time, it also, like, made me feel for people that don't get to fish, even though I don't have a boat. But I'm like, oh, I feel bad for people that are on the shore. But it was just a weird moment that I had. And I'm like, man, I'm watching them. And it wasn't like a day they were fishing. They were just out with their family that day. And I'm like, oh, I miss that. I miss,
It's very humbling when you get to see both sides and you got the nice boat and then due to an issue, you're back on shore and you get to see things from a whole different perspective. Right. Like, it's, I don't take it for granted anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back on it. But I did find some good spots fishing from the shore that I didn't really, I don't really fish in summertime that way. But so I'm like, hey, I'm, I found some new spots and it was able to expand my horizon that way. But it was definitely different.
Yeah, definitely different. Like, I couldn't catch a walleye offshore if it was planned for me. Awful at that. So I would spend my time bass fishing offshore because it's so much easier.
Yep.
So I got to learning how to catch bass. And I developed a few baits that are in testing for that. But it was a good way to burn time and get away. But there's still nothing like being 3 miles out in the middle of the lake, see that sunset,
And
everything is at peace.
Are you a ride out guy or ride back guy? Which one makes you more happier? The long ride out. You're on Green Bay launch at O'Connell and you're taking off. Like, would you rather be the ride out makes you happier or the ride back in?
Ride out for sure.
Because
usually the ride back in is bumpy. So that's when it's usually fast.
That is true. People always say they don't the ride out because the ride back in they're done. They have to go back to life.
Yeah.
But yeah, something about in the morning, them long runs in the morning that just
it's glass clear. You know the wind's going to pick up. It's still a little chilly out. You got a light jacket on. But you know it's going to get to 80. Yeah. I love it.
Right? Yeah. I can literally picture to myself leaving Oshkosh, heading to Neenah that.
Yep.
Like that, just turning the corner and heading north.
Yep. Yeah, I love that. Especially during tournament time, like your shotgun takeoff and all that. Like, there's something about it.
So what do you feel about all the issues that that tournaments are having lately? With the cheating and the... Well, they just had the guy that put the tungsten weights in the crappie.
Yeah, I just saw that too.
I'm like, right? I'm like,
can you guys just stop cheating?
Right.
If you got to cheat to win, why even be in the sport?
Right.
How do you live with yourself? I don't get it. And then there was a big thing. I think it was the wall I won too.
About NWT?
No. This is recent. At least I saw it. It was an article. The guy failed the polygraph test and was disqualified.
Oh.
And the thoughts, conversation that came up with it, like, what are your thoughts about it? I'm like, well, I failed the polygraph test when I knew it was incorrect.
Right.
So I don't have any faith in them.
Yeah.
I told the guys, like, my opinion, take two.
Right.
And don't ever take an eye detector test. That's the new thing.
Oh.
Or they do it with your eyes.
Really?
I even failed. I didn't get my name right on the questions. That's how off it was. That's the one I failed.
Oh, that's funny.
I was terrible. But just stop cheating. Is it that hard?
Do you think it's because they want the money or is it the fame?
I think it's the money.
Is the money thing?
It's the fame. How?
Well, to be the guy that caught, you know what I mean? There's some fishermen. Think have that of like I want to be you know
I'm
better than you, that kind of thing, or
definitely is,
because there's not a ton of money. I mean, I suppose at the end of the day most of the time you're just breaking even at the end of the year, right? I mean,
pretty much,
unless you pull one of the big, you know, a big tournament here and there, generally you're a couple thousand bucks here and there and kind of more for
fun.
You're
breaking even. If I break even every year, I'm happy,
right? For sure.
I don't have corporate sponsors paying for this or that, right. If I break even, I'm happy. I would say it's both like ego kind of thing and obviously money. Some of these guys that have taken.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's huge when it adds up.
Yeah, anything with those guys in Erie, they were pulling some serious money out of there over and over again.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. I mean, what goes through their head that you're sitting in the boat? And I know you're just sitting in the boat and I'm like, hey, why don't we just want to jam some shit and some fish? I mean. Just like how that starts. I just don't even get how that whole conversation got started and how there's, you know, let's start just jamming shit in the fish for the next 4 years.
Yeah. How do you go up to the scales and like not get paranoid?
Right. Talk about the stress. I do. The only thing I have to say, the props, is the one guy stood there and took it like a man.
Yep.
I mean, I thought they were going to beat the shit out of me and they just stood there and took it.
Yeah. He took it. The other one ran or left.
Yeah.
But he did take it. That's the only thing that I will give him credit for. Yeah. But I just don't get to stop. Yeah. You're ruining the whole series, everything for everybody. Yeah. We already got a bad rep as it is because of it.
Right. No. Yeah, just when you think when walleye, you know, walleye fish is always kind of second because there's not as many, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's more bass fishermen, there's more tournaments. But as we start getting going and building and this stuff just keeps happening, it's like, knock it off.
Yeah, like the whole, like it made world news
with
the Erie scandal. I'm like, that's just bad.
Right, it's bad for everybody. Doesn't make anybody look good, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, it makes all anglers look bad. Mm-hmm. Like, he's probably cheating too.
Right.
Like, if one guy keeps getting caught, or one series, or people keep getting caught, it's going to be questioned in every series. Right. By everybody.
Yep.
It's going to be a pattern. Oh, he got that weight. He must have cheated.
Right.
And
that's true.
It's like a stigma. Yep. That,
if you have a great day, you cheated.
Yeah. Like, I had one of the best days of my life. And then I had that thrown on me. Oh, you cheated then. I'm like, no. You're just taking it from that person.
Right. Yeah.
That joy, that sense of accomplishment away. So by seeing all these guys cheating or in one way or another, altering the fish, just giving the sport a bad rep.
Right. So do you think CR is gonna catch a quarterly? I always want to say CPR for some reason. catch, record, release is going to help this? And you think it's going to be, we're all going to be doing it someday?
I hope so. I really like that format.
Right.
I mean, it saves a fish. There is no way to eat that I can see.
No, I had Denny on, and he said they have stuff in their pictures they can see. I don't really know what that meant, but they have ways to figure stuff out. Because I asked them about, can you snap off a scale and just have one, you know, all of a sudden you have a nice walleye that you beat the shit out of it, basically, make it look different. He's like, no, we can tell. And I'm like, okay, well, I suppose. I mean,
it's incredible what he can tell. Just by the fish, like right. With a picture.
I suppose they say that the scales are like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
So they're, I mean, I guess I don't look that way at them. I mean, I just like, hey, look at that. It's cool. It's, you know.
The way he does it is just absolutely incredible. Right. He can identify, like, if it was foul hooked.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Like, off of a picture.
That's pretty crazy.
I'm like, that is wild.
Right.
So, and me and him, we've talked about that before. It was pretty cool. I took fourth and the pier a couple years ago, and I was new to it. I'm like, how do you even determine the length and the weight right. and all that stuff and verify it? So I sat there and talked to him. Right. But it's pretty cool. And then the people from Fish Donkey, I speak to them regularly, actually. They're very cool about yep. everything as well. I think that's the newer way to go.
Right. There's another one too, E tournaments, I think. And what they separate themselves from Fish Donkey is they actually lock out the tournament directors out. So the tournament directors get locked out of it. Once it gets started, once it's going, only e-tournament people can be on it. So if they, because it's all GPS enabled, so they don't allow them to have access to the GPS and all that stuff while the tournament's going. So
that's smart.
So if you had some directors and some smaller tournaments that wanted to, like, you could see where everybody's at, right? I mean, sometimes you could see with the pictures, but most people hide that. But they hide that feature. And if there's a question, they can email them and say, hey, we have a question about this boat. And then they'll review it, which is pretty cool.
That's a good one. Because
I know a lot of people worry about the directors in some small tournaments. And are they on the up and up and all that kind of stuff?
I have two different occasions. There's been questionable calls from directors. I think that's another big thing, too, with the whole cheating thing. Like, the right. director of the tournament needs to be held accountable for things they do as well.
Right, our decisions they make. Yeah. I mean, I was on a series 2 years ago where they actually, anytime there was an issue, they sent it out to random anglers. And, like, three or four, got an email or a text, and they asked a question, gave you a picture, what do you think, your honest response, and that's how they made a decision of what they're going to do, which I thought that was awesome.
Yep.
Because it's not, you don't, it's you're unbiased. Randomly picking three people. Yeah, you're not biased.
Unbiased decision.
Yeah.
Two examples I've seen in the last 2 years of questionable calls that probably shouldn't have been made. I think they need to be held just as accountable as the angler.
Yeah.
So it goes both sides of the fence.
For sure.
But that feature for that app, that's probably a game changer.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And they're out of, I don't know, Dakotas, I think. So we don't really see them over here. I think Fish Donkey's pretty much got us locked down over here.
Yeah.
But I kept them on a different podcast. And I was like, that's cool. Just a different version of being able to lock out your director from certain things. Right? They could still see their fish.
Yep.
And that stuff, but they couldn't see where the anglers were at. Which I'm like, that's cool, because I mean, that would worry. Let me not worry me to a point where they're going to send somebody next to me, but, you know, if you're, you know, we get in the summer in Bago every weekend, every 4 days there's a tournament, right? And if you're on something,
people are going
to
know.
Yeah, people are going to know. You try to keep that to yourself as long as you possibly can, or to use it for the right tournament. And
I've heard some horror stories about that up on the bay from some people that had tournament with it. And then next tournament, all of a sudden, all these people are here.
Right.
And that's how they found out, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody's, you know, the one thing that Denny can't protect is when he puts the pictures out, right? And everybody scours those pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And figure out where everybody was. Yep. And everybody's crunching down underneath the camera, trying to get underneath the boat, which is funny to me.
I mean, it's such a big body of water.
Right.
Anyone that we fish for aim, it's huge.
Right. Well, then the other thing, too, is it's hard. I think it's hard for people. First, people that fish Bago and stuff, or you fish your own home water all the time. Guys that are on the water, you send me a picture of a background, I'm within a couple seconds, I probably can tell you where you're at. Because we're out trolling. You're doing, you've probably made hundreds of loops around the lake of just trolling this shore, that shore. And when you're trolling or you're casting, you're just staring at shore. You're literally committing something to memory that you have no idea.
Yeah. If you're a local, it doesn't matter. You see the picture. Odds are you're going to know where it is.
Right where you're at.
Yep. Trust me, I've done it.
Right? I mean, yeah. You go, yeah. Who's the...
I find myself like, I know where he's making that run. All right, I'm going to go test some lures out. And sure enough, that's right. Where he was.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Anything else? What's coming up for you this summer?
Tournaments.
What are you participating in this summer?
I'm already locked in for all the AIM tournaments. Cool. We do Battle on Bago, a lot of the local little ones.
MWC? MWC's in town this year.
Probably, I was thinking that. Thinking doing that in Spring Valley as well.
Okay.
Just because it's a river.
Yep. Like,
I love rivers.
Right, yeah, that's I was thinking about doing the NWT, but I was wanted to be in Detroit. I'm like, come on, be Detroit,
yes.
I'm like, that's the Erie, and I'm in Erie, so I'm like, oh, man. I'm still thinking of doing the Red Wing.
Red Wing would be fun.
That would be fun.
That would like be that. Fun.
It's one of a favorite place for me.
I look at the entry fee. I'm like,
oh, right?
That would hurt. I better do well. Because there's such a shortage of, like, co's, mm-hmm. pros, and all yep. that. There's no guarantee anymore. No. So
I mean, I'm sure there's guarantees. If you're on the – I suppose if you take the whole – the 40, 50 guys that do the whole thing are probably guaranteed, and the rest of us are just getting in for, see if we can get a co.
Yeah. So I'm like, if I'm ever going to do it, I won't do it as a co. It'd be cool to run one as a co, right. Just to watch some right. other pro.
Teacher. I did it last year as a pro, and when it came to town, and it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience. Having somebody in your boat you never met was different. Both of them were good dudes. One guy was a really good fisherman, was a good river fisherman. So I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's going to work.
This is what I do all day. And the other guy didn't do too much river stuff. So that was kind of, different. It was little, teaching things here and there. But just the whole kind of atmosphere was different. And, leading up to it and the pre-fishing and the boats and then everybody shows up in town and you're like, geez, and then you're trying to save your spots. And it doesn't matter. They find everything, right? I mean, these guys, that's all they do. And they're.
Yep.
But as ironically, I fish spots that I've never fished before during the tournament. And, I got I finished 51st or something like that. So I was like, oh, I was happy. I went top 75.
That's good.
I'm going to do this. And I just couldn't get enough big fish. I thought I had, my goal was to catch everything 19 and over. And if I wasn't, I'd throw it back. And that kind of haunted me at the end because like the day two, I only put 3 fish in the boat. And I'm like, if I just went ahead. Kept one of those other fish, that's another 10 spots. And
I heard a lot of people doing that. I knew where the leader was. Yep. I knew exactly when he put his last fish in the live well. And then I went down to the river and I waited because he was coming through Winnicott.
Yep.
I'm like, well, there he is. We'll see what he has for a weight. But the night before that, the first day of fishing, I'm like, I got to get out and these guys are on the water. I want to find some fish. Mm-hmm. See if I can do it.
Yep.
Kit 41, which day two, they did really well on 41.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I popped a 25 immediately
getting
there and pulled 2 more 19s. And then it was dark. I made 2 techs, a buddy of mine. And then I look at the results of day two. I'm like, oh, where did these guys come from?
Right.
Jake and Isaac were in there.
Yep.
I'm like, good for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was eye opening that I just, I had a thing that I was working on and it was working good and then it died off. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then the next week I ended up working well and I did really well in a tournament next week. But I'm like, God, if it would have been rather had that finish with 80,000 on the line than 1,000.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But you never know. I mean, it was fun. It was stressful for me. Not stressful, but just I was afraid I wasn't catching any fish, right? I was afraid. I'm like, I know how to catch fish. It's your home water, but I just in the back of my head, what if you go out there and you zero, or you like you have just a terrible day, or you just, you know, it would just, I don't know. That was my only worry. Once I caught my first fish, got the first fish in the boat, then it was like a normal Battle on Bago or Merck National.
Yep.
Or something, just a normal tournament then. Although the boats were nicer, but
yeah. Yeah, them boats are nuts. That first fish is always the hardest. I can never get take that back. Last year I did it one time in a tournament. I can never get my first fish in the boat until 9 o'clock or later. For whatever reason.
Really?
I have no idea why. I can never do it, but last year I did it one time. I think it was first 20 minutes being in the tournament.
Wow.
After that. So I don't even stress until around 9 o'clock.
Right. I get pretty stressed if we don't get going one of the first spots. And it's one thing if you pull up someplace, somebody's there or someone's followed you there and whatever. I think there's only a couple. I'm pretty fast. So if I have a first flight, I pretty much get where I want, you know. Yep. As long as there's nobody else there, I'm pretty happy. I'm like, okay, we should catch something. But yeah. If it's that first spot doesn't go, you're like, oh, what the hell happened? And the second spot, and you know, some. You roll up on 9:30, 10. I start kind of freaking out a little bit. I'm like, okay, are we just gonna bail and go? We always talk about it's money. Are we fishing for money fish or food? And I'm like, I'll go fish for food right now and catch a bunch of 15s. I don't care.
Yeah, something to put in the box.
Right.
Take a picture. I don't stress it, and for whatever reason, I seem to be the last hour. That's when I shine.
Okay.
I push it right to the end. 2 minutes left, that's when I get the final fish in the boat. It always works out that way.
Yeah.
Takes me all day to figure out the pattern to finally cap it off. It's something I haven't been able to change. I've won or placed in the money within the last 15 minutes of a tournament more times than I
can
count.
That's crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's sticking with it, though.
I mean, it's working. I would rather have a little more cushion room, but... is what it is. Don't know what about it changes, but that my focus or something, I get it done that last hour.
The uber focus, yeah.
Could be. That's something I'm going to work on pretty hard this year, mentality wise, and grinding a little harder. I think I get a little sluggish sometimes during midday.
Yeah, I always, my pre-fishing, I just never know how to pre-fish. I don't know. I mean, you go out and catch fish. You find big fish. Do you leave them? Do you not leave them? How much do you hit on them? How much this and that? And how many spots are in? Well, no, there's never enough spots, I guess. But, you know, that whole, how do you go through that? And that's one thing with the NWT that taught me that I just need to do more spots. And I actually, during NWT, I never fished the lake. I never was on Winnebago. I spent my whole time in Winnicott County, and I hardly ever fish Winnicott. I just was trying new stuff, and I'm like, oh, look at that works, and this works, and as a secondary spot, and I'm like, I just end up sticking with it, and it worked. It was just odd to me that of all my time on the lake, I kind of abandoned it, you know.
Yep.
That's weird.
That's one of my goals for this year too. I start working the upper lakes a lot more, learning them more. I know Bago pretty good. North, south, east, west. I know Beatamore decent. I know Boygan, like Chu area.
Yep.
I want to find some of them.
Right. I try to pick a new spot every year to learn.
Yep.
Right? To really kind of like get in there and spend a lot of time in there.
Yeah, I usually have a goal on what I'd like to learn or increase knowledge on, either a spot or a technique or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like last year was jigging. I got pretty good with the shiver minnow. This year, or around here anyway, we're going to focus on upper lake, learning them, mapping them, all that fun stuff. But as a series, for AIM, the goal is nothing less than a 25th finish.
Oh, there you go.
So that's pretty... well down.
Yep.
Well doable.
Yep.
You just got to focus and get it.
Right.
And get your five fish. Yep. That's you need.
You know, if I always say, if you just catch 5 16-inch fish on any Winnebago tournament, lifetime, if you could put 5 16-inch fish on the card every time you fish a tournament, you'd have made a shit ton of money.
Yep.
shit ton of money, but we all get caught up in, gotta have 20 inches, gotta have that kicker fish.
Gotta, yep.
You gotta have five fish first.
Yep. Right. Always. And that's been a struggle of mine too for ever, getting five on the card before anything. I'll take five. I think Denny says we can have 12 inches. I'll take five 12s, put them on the card.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's just to have my five.
That's true. Yeah.
But,
and they're back to Pete and Wall this year too.
Can't wait for that one. Fun. I love Pete and Wall. We didn't do well last time we were there, but
I learned a lot, lost a lot of things. I came up with this weird thing. I actually took off the whole week before that tournament last year because I've grew up ice fishing it, but never really boat fish a lot. So we went spent the whole week there and had a nice week there. And I came up with this dumb plan. Well, I was working this plan to throw blade baits alongside the trees, right? Worked great until the day the Sunday kicked off and it got windy. And you couldn't really control what you were doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
So the 360 was, you're kind of moving around, so you couldn't really lock down where the trees were. After, I think it was 6 or 7 blade baits I lost in a row. I'm like, well, we might as well go do our other plan.
Yep.
But we were pulling big fish out of there in the nice calm day, and the wind picked up. I'm like, I don't know, man. It was stupid and working. It didn't work. I mean, we should have went old school and just throw one of the big like marker buoys down on the tree.
Yeah. You know? That stuff worked.
It so does, you know,
but, right where it is.
Yeah, but just some of the weird things, and you catch so many fish out there. I mean, we didn't do. I was surprised at the size of fish they caught.
Oh yeah,
like we did pretty well, I thought, and I think we barely sniffed the top 20. And man, there were some big fish caught out there. I knew there was big fish there. I just didn't expect for us to go in there. And I remember reading an article in one of their little magazine out there, and they were not talking shame on us, but kind of talking shame was anglers, and they're expecting their local guys to do good. And I think the local guys finished way down the list.
Yeah.
And all these guys come in and just pounded all these big fish. And I'm like, man, I didn't see them coming at all. And I thought we were having a good week. I'm like, okay, you can be up there. And if 15 pounds, you do fine. 15 pounds was nothing.
Yep.
It was nothing.
It's not. Sometimes you'll have nothing for like 10 pounds. You'll win something, and then it'll be 25, 30.
Right. It's
crazy how things change. I was there 2 years ago for AIM, and we had a good program going on in the river. Well, it turned 70 that week before AIM. The water temp rose, and the fish jumped back into the lake.
Yeah, they're gone.
I'm like, now what? I mean, we figured out like chubbing. I never knew what that was.
Right, yeah.
I learned that the night before the tournament on how to chub.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let's go see what happens.
All right. Let's go buy some chubs. Let's go bottom the Bighorn and get some chubs.
Yep.
What's your favorite tournament to fish in? Do you have one?
I like Hoagies.
Hoagies.
Local one.
Yep.
Actually, that's one of my preferred ones. Because I've won it. Mm-hmm. And that was the first tournament I've ever done. Ever. So that one.
That is one of my favorites. As a kid, Hoagies always had this. It was one of the ones that always had the sticks in it. It was, if you were a fisherman when I was growing up, if you were a walleye guy, you were in Hoagies.
Yep.
You were before the big tournaments. It just basically all the Oshkosh just hammers fishing. That's always one of my favorite tournaments every year.
That's kind of why I had it too. Like my grandpa and dad, when they did tournaments together, they. Hoagies was the one.
Yep.
Like, that's the one you want to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I had two on my list. One was Merck Nationals and Hoagies. And I was able to win Hoagies last year, so that was cool. Yep. And I was close on Merck Nationals, but just not quite close enough. So that's the one left for me. But, yeah, those were the ones growing up, man. There was no battle. I guess it would have been Battle and Bago. It was
Otter Street.
Otter Street back in the day, yeah. But that one doesn't really register to me as when I was a kid. It was always Hoagies and Hoagies and Merck Nationals.
I've only been able to fish Merck once because I've never had a Merck.
Oh, yeah.
Like I went from Evinrude to a Yamaha now, but I got a buddy who always needs part shit. We did that. We had it last time we were there 2 years ago. We had a shot to take possibly the lead and win it on day two. His wife called at like 10:30, and we had to be done.
Oh
my God. I was so angry. But
Yeah, I like it. It's just that's a long ass drive up the lake to start off there, because I don't really fish south much. I mean, I have, but I don't. It's not my game. There's no rivers down there, right?
Yep.
For me, so it's all the way up no matter what, and that can be a long haul.
Yeah.
Especially if it's shitty. And last year was pretty terrible, so that was a rough ride.
What year was it when the lightning? Was that from Mark? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
Like, I remember being out just fishing, and all you guys are up there, and it was bad up there. Right. And hearing stories about, and nobody would grab a pole out of the rod holder after the board went back and get static electricity.
Yeah. We were sitting, where were we trolling? We were afraid because the wind picked up too much, and we were on Asylum. Yeah. Oh, on Garlic Island. Mm-hmm. And we were trolling over, like, you know, 3.5 feet, and the waves were picking up. I'm like, we probably should get off the reef here, and just to get so we don't bottom out or something, because it was getting rough. We just sat there like this, huddled together, and just hope nothing bad. But it was so fast too. Yep. But you could see it coming, and I'm like, I don't know, you know, we're fishermen. It's tournament. You're not gonna get off the lake.
No.
And I'm like, God, I think we'll be fine. And it was rough. It was terrifying. Not terrifying, but it was probably the worst I've been, because we got hailed on too.
Yep.
Towards the end, and then
it was like a tornado warning.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was gone. The sun came out, and all right, well, back to normal. Right?
Yeah.
The fish were gone. You know, the waves beat up the fish so much on the reef, they were done there, and we were lost. I'm like, I don't know what to do now. That's all we had was a shallow reef program.
Yep.
And once the wind picks up like that, those shallow reefs, they're done basically. And, you know, they don't want to be back up there. And we couldn't figure out, you know, we knew they had to obviously go on the edges, and we couldn't figure out what they wanted. I assume they were just beat up and called it a day for themselves.
Yep.
Right. Like, that's a hangover. They want to be done.
Done for the day. That's how it is. That's how all them guys were talking for NWT. How many different techniques you need.
Right.
And how many times you have to change it every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
To catch a Winnebago walleye.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that is one thing, you know, it's funny. You look at all the people, and I guess now it's getting different because there's so many young kids into live scopes, and we're kind of going towards that. But like, older generations, older guys, people your age and older, how many come off the Winnebago system is absolute Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Professional fishermen. There is a ton of them that come from this area. And it's, you know, learning all those different tactics to be somewhat successful.
Yeah, you have to. Like, or you're not going to catch them. I watched some of the NWT guys and talked to them who've never been on Winnebago. I'm like, it's a whole different game.
Yeah.
So it's a good skill set to have to grow up on a lake like that.
Right. For sure. For sure. A lot of stress, but good.
Lot.
It makes going other places like Peatonwell easier.
Oh, right? Yeah, much like, easier. Oh,
there's all kinds of shit I can do here.
Yep. Yep. You got a lot in your arsenal then. You can catch them on Winnebago. And if you can figure out what bait works on Winnebago, some fish are finicky.
That's true. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me.
There's nothing better than talking fishing with another bagel guy.
No. Now it's got me fired up. I want to go.
Right? Yeah. I can't wait till I probably won't, maybe midweek, I'll probably get out like Tuesday, Wednesday, or something like that, and finally put the boat back in the water. But
that's what I'm thinking, next week sometime. Dip here.
Right? Yeah. That place is popping off right now. Holy mackerel.
So what I heard.
Hopefully there'll be enough fish left, because the not keep date's not till another 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah. Everything is weird with that right now. Right. And I'm watching pretty close.
Yeah.
I'm watching for the spawn. I'm going to take a wild guess. It's going to be early.
I would assume so.
And we're going to be out on the bay.
Yeah, right. So, awesome. Well, thanks for coming in. If you're looking to be on an episode of Walleye Chronicles, hit me up on my socials, Matt Snell on Instagram or Smiling Fish on TikTok. And remember, there's two things you can do every day to make somebody's day better. One is give them a smile, and two, take them fishing. Thanks a lot and have a great day. Thank you, sir.